It's not quite a party in here, but we're having all kinds of fun here on a Friday afternoon for Bullseye on the Afternoon with Matt Douglas and yours truly, Andy Bulbarch. You've got us for about another 45 minutes or so, and then you and I get to start our weekend.
Weekend! Woohoo!
Yes, woohoo indeed. Get out the party favors, the popcorn, yeah. All that good stuff. All right, well, let's head to the hotline. Before we bring out the party favors and popcorn, we bring in our very next guest, Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Adam, how are you today?
I'm doing well, boys. It's a party now that I'm here.
That's the truth.
Doggone right it is. Now we can get out the popcorn and the party favors, and we can certainly start to break down some of these college football bowl games before we specifically get into some of the ones going on today. There are seven tomorrow and a few more coming our way next week. You wrote a pretty interesting piece on the effect of interim head coaches in bowl games and how that affects things from a handicapping perspective. Adam, what were some of your major takeaways in putting this together?
You know, one of the biggest takeaways for me is that, I mean, this really has to be treated on a case-by-case basis. There's no overarching theme here. There's no trend of, you know, interim head coaches doing poorly in bowl games. It just depends on the team. It depends on how much appreciation and respect they have for the guy that's the interim. Really, over the last 16 or so bowl seasons, it's a 50-50 proposition with an interim head coach. So, hasn't been a bad thing, hasn't been a good thing. It's just kind of been a thing, and it just, you know, depends on the team and I guess the situation, too, you know, depending on how the coach left, if the new coach is already in place, stuff like that. So nothing across the board, but, you know, when you kind of look at a case-by-case basis, I'm sure there are some angles to be had.
In some cases, aren't these guys coaching for job, right? Wasn't it Bill Stewart when Rich Rod went on to Michigan who ended up getting that West Virginia job because of the fact he did so well in the bowl game?
Yeah, it can definitely be a thing. I mean, this year, though, we've got Florida State has an interim. They've already hired Mike Norvell from Memphis. FAU's got an interim head coach tomorrow, and in fact, they just suspended a bunch of players. So probably not going to go real well for Glenn Spencer. There's only three teams that have an interim head coach during this bowl season, and you know, for the most part, they already know who's going to be coaching next year. So nobody really coaching for a job this time around.
Gotcha.
Well, and then tomorrow, of course, seven different bowl games going on. A pretty large slate here as we are at the very beginning of bowl season, a couple going on today. Seven tomorrow. Are there any tomorrow that really kind of stand out to you?
Well, I really liked SMU minus three, but as I mentioned, Florida Atlantic announcing a bunch of suspensions, a few guys sitting out kind of prepping for the NFL draft. So that line this afternoon went up from 3 to 6.5. So glad I got in at the 3. We'll see what happens here with the 6, 6.5 that's out there now. I do like Central Michigan tomorrow in the New Mexico Bowl as well. Central Michigan, a team that had 3.8 yards per play on offense last year, one of the worst in the country. This season, over 6 yards per play. Defensively, they were really good last year, but you didn't know it because they couldn't move the football. Pretty good defensively again this year. And San Diego State head coach Rocky Long, he's not really big on the bowl games. He doesn't worry too much about them. So you got a motivated Central Michigan team, a San Diego State team that was awful on offense all season long. I like the MAC team here out in Albuquerque. The only concern I do have is Albuquerque's at elevation. San Diego State's used to that. Central Michigan isn't. But I still think they're the right side in that game.
Well, and there are a few more that take place after Saturday, straight through next Friday. I believe there are four altogether during that stretch. You've got the Gasparilla, the Hawaii, the Independence, and the Quick Lane Bowl. All interesting, unique names. Which bowls do you think bring the most amount of intrigue?
I think the Gasparilla Bowl is actually really interesting because you've got a UCF team that, you know, the last couple of years, they've played really good teams. You know, they played Auburn and beat them last year. They've gotten a couple of opportunities against major programs. Here they're playing Marshall, and nothing against Marshall, but I mean, Marshall's not, you know, a Power 5 nationally recognized brand like UCF has played the last couple of years. This one's in Tampa, so UCF doesn't even get to leave the state. Not as fun, you know, because the bowl game's generally a destination type of thing. And Marshall has 33 players on the roster from the state of Florida. So those guys are going to be excited. Those guys are going to be fired up to go back home, play in front of friends and family. Marshall's getting 17 points in this game, one of the highest bowl spreads of all time. I believe it's actually the second highest bowl spread of all time. I like Marshall in this one. I think they keep it very close. I don't think that they win the game, but I do think they keep it very, very respectable.
Again, we're speaking with Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. All right, we'll set the college football bowl season aside for now. We'll revisit that next week, and we'll turn our attention now to the NFL. No more Thursday games, but there are a few good ones tomorrow and into Sunday. We'll begin with the slate tomorrow. Do you like the 49ers, at least presently, laying 6.5 against the Rams?
I actually do like the 49ers here. I mean, you know, I've kind of talked about this a little bit over the last few weeks that, you know, their defense is tired. They had a very early bye week, and we saw that play out last week as they weren't able to finish off the game against the Falcons. I think that sort of re-energizes and refocuses this 49ers team. And the Rams, I mean, you go from playing in the Super Bowl to not making the playoffs the following year. I think it's going to be very difficult for them to be invested here the last two games of the regular season. They do have an outside shot at getting in. It's not going to happen for them, though. So I think that's one of those cases where you're paying a little bit of an inflated number when you talk about taking the 49ers here as such a big favorite, but I think it's completely justified in that one.
Another intriguing game tomorrow. You've got the Patriots taking on the Bills. Wait, you think there are going to be some Pats teasers that will be very, very popular tomorrow? Why is that?
Yeah, so what happens with a teaser is you basically take 6 points away from the favorite, or you add 6 points to the underdog. So that's why it's called a teaser. It sort of, you know, gives you a little bit better of an opportunity. And in a lot of instances here in this weekend's action, you've got some situations where you've got favorites that are 6, 6.5 points, something like that. So people are going to be able to tease them down into essentially a pick'em situation to where all they have to do is win the game for you. That's something that's very, very attractive to a lot of bettors out there. The Patriots are in that spot. The 49ers that we just talked about, they're in that spot as well. Indianapolis is in that spot, taking out a first-time starting quarterback in Will Greer. So you're going to see a lot of teaser activity here on the favorites this week, to the point where all they have to do is win the football game. And I think that's going to be a really, really popular bet with a lot of people.
Well, and then taking a look at Sunday, there's some interesting games on Sunday straight throughout the day. Are there any that really kind of stand out to you? Are there any really interesting matchups from a handicapping perspective?
Yeah, I think there are a few. I mean, you know, obviously this one with some local flair here. The Cleveland Browns and the Baltimore Ravens. You know, this one's really interesting because when the Browns actually beat the Ravens earlier on in the season, they were a 5.5-point underdog on the road in Baltimore. In this game, they're up to a 10.5-point underdog at home. So a massive adjustment made to this game. In my estimation, I think it's too big of an adjustment. But again, it's obviously very difficult to take the Browns with the ongoing soap opera that's there with them. So it's just really interesting to me to see that you are really paying a premium now if you want to bet on the Baltimore Ravens. And this week sort of underscores it, and I'm sure next week and probably on into the playoffs you'll see that as well.
Well, and then into Monday night we go. You've got the Green Bay Packers taking on the Minnesota Vikings. Why do you think we're seeing so much money on the under for Monday night?
Yeah, it's one of those things where a lot of people don't really believe in the Green Bay Packers offense. A lot of people like the Minnesota Vikings all around, offensively and defensively, but no Dalvin Cook this week for Minnesota. That kind of makes them a little bit one-dimensional, unless Alex Mattison has a really nice game for them. Green Bay defensively does tend to play pretty well. But one of the big things about the Packers this season is that their first quarters have been exceptional offensively. Everything else has not been. And we kind of saw that play out last week. They did have a good third quarter against the Chicago Bears, but they start kind of fast, then they really fizzle out. And I think the expectation here is that with the familiarity between the two teams, with the MO for Green Bay so far, you're kind of looking for an under-type situation there on Monday night.
And the weather doesn't really seem as though it's going to dictate a whole lot of that, because it doesn't seem like the temperatures are going to be that extreme. And as of now, I mean, we're still a few days out, but as of now, it doesn't look like there's going to be a ton of precipitation for that matchup, does there?
No, I'll say this. I mean, well, that one, for one thing, U.S. Bank Stadium, that one's actually indoors. But you do see a lot of totals activity on the under here this week. And I think that's an important thing to point out, because in games that don't mean anything, you tend to get some really high-scoring situations because the teams just aren't as focused defensively. Offensive guys are trying to go out there and put up numbers, so on and so forth. In the games that actually really mean something, you tend to see a lot of lower-scoring games here at this time of the year. I think that Packers-Vikings game obviously falls into that category, with so much on the line in the NFC North. So the more important the game is, the tighter it's generally played, the more low-scoring environments you're going to have. So that's kind of factoring into the equation with that game and some of the other games. For example, Dallas and Philadelphia. This thing comes with the territory here at this time of the year.
All right, well, I know there aren't any odds for this currently, but being the Indians fan that you are, I know we've brought this to your attention before about Frankie Lindor. Not sure what the odds are that he will be dealt between now and the end of the weekend or maybe the middle of next week, but I'm sure you've seen the report. Ken Rosenthal with The Athletic put it out there late last night that apparently the Indians are putting it out there that they are asking for some final offers as far as the Francisco Lindor sweepstakes are concerned. And, you know, I haven't seen a whole lot out there that really excites me one way or the other. You know, we talked about this at the end of the last hour. TJ Zuppi, Cleveland Baseball Insiders at SI.com with Matt Lodi and company, put out a scenario talking about how a third team could potentially get involved. And have you seen a package out there that would really excite you as far as what the Indians would get back in exchange for Frankie Lindor at this point?
Well, I mean, you know, this is kind of their MO, right? I mean, they do the three-team deals. They've done a few of them here before, and I think that you probably have to find a three-team deal for Lindor, because if you get Gavin Lux from the Dodgers, they're not going to want to give up a whole lot more than that. So if you're the Indians, it's very, very hard to do a one-for-one type of deal for Lindor, or a one-plus, you know, a smaller piece or something like that. So I think in the Indians' best interest, it would be to add a third team. The Reds obviously make a lot of sense here in this scenario, and they're very good at doing this. They're very good at putting together a third team where everybody's kind of happy with the deal. So that would be my expectation here. You know, I think that's kind of what their plan is. You know, they want to see where everybody kind of stands on this thing, and then they'll say, okay, well, if you're going to give us X, Y, and Z, why don't you give Y over to this team? You can get X from this team, and then we can make ourselves really happy and make everybody happy. So they're being creative, as they should be with a player of Lindor's caliber. And I mean, look, the way you look at it right now, it certainly looks very likely that something gets done. I don't know if it's as quickly as before Christmas, but I would certainly expect something to get done here at some point.
So let's throw this scenario at you then. Again, this was posted earlier today, SI.com, the Cleveland Baseball Insider. It was TJ Zuppi who put it together. He said he just kind of speculating, throwing some ideas out there. Here's what he came up with. A three-team deal. And he put, in this scenario, the Indians would get Nick Senzel, Alex Verdugo, and Dustin May. Dodgers would get Lindor and Amir Garrett. The Reds would get Corey Seager, catcher Austin Barnes, and Delino DeShields would go to the Reds also. You take a look at all of that. If the Indians are giving up Lindor and DeShields, do you like what they're getting back potentially there in Senzel, Verdugo, and Dustin May?
Actually, I do. And the funny thing is, Zuppi actually DM'd me on Twitter and asked, you know, he's like, what do you think about this deal? You think it, you know, makes sense to write about? And I think it does. I think it makes everybody happy because, you know, the Dodgers get what they want without giving up Gavin Lux. The Reds get, you know, an upgraded shortstop. It's not a Francisco Lindor type upgrade, but Corey Seager's a pretty solid player. They do it without giving up their top prospect, Jonathan India, third baseman. So I think it kind of makes everybody happy here. So, you know, the Indians would get three really high upside types of players in Senzel, May, and then, you know, as you mentioned, you know, getting, you know, some really important pieces that do help them. And Verdugo is a guy that, you know, very versatile type of player. They certainly like guys like that. I think it's exactly the type of thing you're looking for. And I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, if a deal does come together, if that type of framework is present in that trade.
Say that goes down or something very, very similar to that goes down. How much do you think that affects the Indians in 2020? Because you're talking about three guys the Indians will get in that deal that would probably be on the opening day roster, no?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. You know, I mean, their starting rotation would be ridiculous. You know, assuming that they don't trade Mike Clevinger or something like that, their starting rotation would be absurd if you added Dustin May to it, who, I mean, he has elite-level stuff. We'll see if the command comes around, but I don't know. The only question is who plays shortstop in this scenario, because they wouldn't have one. So they would either have to spend the money they saved in the Kluber and Lindor deal to get a shortstop, or figure something else out in a trade. So that would be the big question. But I'll tell you what, they'd be very balanced. They'd be very deep. That starting staff would be outstanding. You know, they've got the makings of a really good bullpen. I like it all the way around for the Indians if that's the way things play out.
going to be really interesting to see how exactly they play out, that's for sure, and hopefully we'll know something over the next few days. Adam, as always, we appreciate you joining us. Happy holidays to you and yours, and we look forward to catching up again next week.
Same to you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Adam. Again, that's Adam Burke joining us with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio.